and welcome into a Monday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can check out the show 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app and listen to the show on demand on your own time. Boy, has it been an interesting news weekend across the United States. And man, just a couple of hours after we were off the air on Friday, all hell breaking loose at the White House as the Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky was in the United States in what was supposed to be, and from all accounts, a relatively simple meeting. Him coming to the United States after his cabinet agreed upon a U.S. mineral deal. He was set to travel and did travel to the United States to sign that mineral deal into authorization, get that fully signed, and begin the process of ending the Russia-Ukraine war that has been brewing for years now. From all accounts, supposed to be a relatively simple meeting, a relatively simple event. It devolved into chaos just moments after it began at the White House on Friday with the Ukrainian president going back and forth with J.D. Vance and President Donald Trump. Here is the exchange as it happened live on Friday.
I'm talking about the kind of diplomacy that's going to end the destruction of your country.
Yes, but if you
Mr. President, with respect, I think it's disrespectful for you to come into the Oval Office and try to litigate this in front of the American media. Right now, you guys are going around and forcing conscripts to the front lines because you have manpower problems. You should be thanking the president for trying to bring it into this conflict.
Have you ever been to Ukraine that you say what problems we have?
I have been to...
Come once.
I've actually watched and seen the stories, and I know what happens is you bring people, you bring them on a propaganda tour, Mr. President. Do you disagree that you've had problems bringing people into your military?
Do we have problems?
And do you think that it's respectful to come to the Oval Office of the United States of America and attack the administration that is trying to prevent the destruction of your country?
A lot of questions. Let's start from the beginning.
Sure.
First of all, during the war, everybody has problems, even you, but you have nice ocean and don't feel now, but you will feel it in the future. God bless you, you will not have a war.
Don't tell us what we're gonna feel. We're trying to solve a problem. Don't tell us what we're gonna feel.
I'm not telling you.
Because
I'm
you're in no position to dictate that.
That's
remember
exactly
this.
I'm not dictating.
You're in no position to dictate what we're gonna feel. We're going to feel very good and very strong.
You will feel influence.
You're right now not in a very good position. You've allowed yourself to be in a very bad position, and it happens to be right about
it. From the very beginning of the war,
you're not in a good position.
You
don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having cards.
Playing cards.
Right now, you don't. Yeah, you're playing cards.
I'm very serious, Mr. President.
You're playing cards.
I'm very serious.
You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country, this country.
It's back
to you. Far more than a lot of people said they should have.
Have you said thank you once?
A lot of times.
No, in this
even
entire
today,
meeting, you said thank
even
you.
Today.
You went to Pennsylvania and campaigned for the opposition in October. Oh. Offer some words of appreciation for the United States of America and the president who's trying to save your country.
Holy moly, what an exchange back and forth at the White House on Friday between Zelensky, Trump, and Vance. You know, all the lead up of this and what we've seen over the last couple of years, I guess maybe I shouldn't have been surprised by this. Now, if you tune into liberal mainstream media and follow liberals on social media, you would believe that what you just watched and what you just saw was the worst thing that had ever happened. And that Zelensky, poor old Vladimir Zelensky, with his $300+ billion worth of United States aid, waltzed his way into the United States and was treated so terribly and treated so poorly by the United States. And that this is just the worst thing that has ever happened. But I'll remind you, and I've got the evidence to back it up, from 2022, this was reported by NBC News at the time. According to an exclusive NBC News report from 2022, Biden raised his voice at Zelensky during a phone call in June of that year. The U.S. president had just announced an additional $1 billion in aid to Ukraine following Russia's invasion. However, before Biden could finish his sentence, Zelensky began listing more requests for assistance. Frustrated, Biden reportedly told him that the American people were being generous and Ukraine should show, quote, a little more gratitude. That was 2022. And so what does that show? It shows a pattern from the Ukrainian president. It shows that it's never been enough for him. The copious amounts of United States aid, the hundreds of billions of dollars that U.S. taxpayers have poured into this war is not enough. It's never been enough. He had a very simple task to accomplish on Friday. Show up to the White House, show up to the United States, sign the mineral agreement, the mineral rights agreement, which I'll get into the details of that in a little bit. Sign the agreement and work towards the three-step process into getting this war done and dealt with. And with a war, with a peace agreement, with a treaty, not everybody is going to get what they want. Individuals are going to have to come to the table. There are going to be concessions. That's how this works. He knew what he needed to do. The United States knew what it needed to do. Everybody was on the same page, I guess, except for the Ukrainian president, who decided to come to the White House and get into a pissing match with J.D. Vance and Donald Trump. It ended so incredibly poorly for him. It was all laid out in front of him. All he had to do was show up, nod his head, speak for a little while, and be done. But he couldn't do that. He needed to insist on more. He continued to talk about security, which was not part of the agreement. Everybody knew the plan. Three steps: mineral agreement, security agreement, ceasefire / treaty, peace deal. That was the three-step plan. Everybody was aware of this plan. Zelensky, his cabinet in Ukraine, the United States, the president, the vice president, senators, everybody was aware of the plan and what needed to be done. But Zelensky couldn't help himself, and it's not the first time. Joe Biden, of all people, was incredibly frustrated with Zelensky back a couple of years ago. You didn't see Joe Biden get frustrated very often. Joe Biden gave blank checks to Ukraine for his entire presidency. Yet, he attempted to do the same thing with Trump. He attempted to operate in the same manner, the way in which I guess he did with the previous administration, and it backfired royally on him. Completely backfired on Zelensky. And I was shocked to see this unfold. Not necessarily the back and forth exchange in the Oval Office, but this unfold after the fact. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. Take a listen to what he had to say on Fox News just about an hour or so after this took place on Friday. This is truly shocking to hear.
That was Zelensky this morning. I urged him to stay on message, be grateful, be thankful. We'll talk about details of security guarantees later. Keep it upbeat, keep it positive. It was absolute, utter disaster. The question for me is he redeemable in the eyes of Americans? Most Americans witnessing what they saw today would not want Zelensky to be their business partner, including me, and I've been to Ukraine 9 times since the war started. I met with him this morning. President Trump, I talked to last night, he was upbeat about the deal. I've never been more proud of President Trump for showing the American people and the world you don't trifle with this man. He was very positive. He was very upbeat. He wanted to get a ceasefire. He wants to end the war. And Zelensky felt like he needed to bait Trump in the Oval Office. J.D. was awesome.
And that's exactly what he did. He attempted to bait Trump in the Oval Office. And J.D. Vance laid it out perfectly right at the start. Zelensky attempted to restage the entire situation in front of the American media, knowing damn well what he was doing. J.D. Vance called his bluff, called him out on it, and then it divulged into him making this empty veiled threat against the United States. So you've got oceans to protect you from war. You're not feeling it right now, but you soon will. What the hell's he thinking? You're going to come to the United States after we've given you $300 billion worth of aid, a lot of that being in munitions, the very tools that you've needed to fight this war. I'll put that in air quotes because it's been a stalemate for years. And he's going to threaten the United States with seemingly with some sort of war. I mean, you talk about fumbling the football at the, you know, the goal line. It doesn't get any worse than what Zelensky attempted to do. He was humiliated. He was called out and he was asked to leave. There was supposed to be a lunch. There was supposed to be a public press conference at 4 o'clock. All of that scrapped, all of that canceled. He was let out of the White House and made his way over to Fox News to do an interview with Bret Baier. Bret Baier asked him 3 different times, do you apologize for the way that you acted? Do you apologize for the rhetoric that you used? And Zelensky couldn't do it. Couldn't apologize for what he said. Could not admit any fault within the meeting. And that's how it ended up. With this back and forth exchange as Zelensky attempted to litigate this in front of the U.S. media. And he was excoriated for it. And I thought that, you know, it was interesting as we listened to Lindsey Graham, and I've got another clip from him coming up here in just a second. But as I listened to Lindsey Graham and his comments about, I've been to Ukraine 9 times. Lindsey Graham has been the most adamant supporter of the war in Ukraine. As he even noted, I've been there 9 times. Lindsey Graham is very well known as a war hawk. He is known as somebody, and you know, there are these ilk of individuals that love foreign wars. They love the United States being involved in foreign conflict. The word that is used to describe a lot of these individuals are neocons. Lindsey Graham squarely falls into that category. And so when Lindsey Graham is no longer on your side, when you have managed to piss him off beyond belief and cause him to completely disregard whatever you're saying and to back the president and call you out, the guy who seemingly he's best friends with, 9 trips to Ukraine, you know you've screwed up royally. And I can understand Graham's frustration because, according to him, he said he spoke to Zelensky earlier Friday morning and told him to keep the meeting on message, keep the meeting on brand, sign the mineral rights agreement, and then we'll work towards the next steps. Everybody was well aware of the plans, I guess, except for the Ukrainian president, who, for him, $300 billion in aid is not enough. The United States has not put enough money and ammunitions and resources on the table. So he attempted to come to the United States and bully this new administration into more concessions and into more resources. It didn't work for him. Here was Lindsey Graham just moments after this took place, leaving the White House, similar to the Fox News clip, but a little bit more ad-libbed right after this took place. Take a listen.
Think complete, utter disaster. I've been to Ukraine 8 or 9 times since the war started. I understand the consequences of Putin's actions against Ukraine. I appreciate what the Ukrainian people have done. They fought like tigers. At the end of the day, I was hoping that this minerals deal, which would be transformative in the relationship, would go over well. I talked to Zelensky this morning. Don't take the bait. President Trump was in a very good mood last night. Somebody asked me, am I embarrassed about Trump? I have never been more proud of the president. I was very proud of J.D. Vance standing up for our country. We want to be helpful. What I saw in the Oval Office was disrespectful. And I don't know if we can ever do business with Zelensky again. I think most Americans saw a guy that they would not want to go in business with. The way he handled the meeting, the way he confronted the president, was just over the top. So I think the relationship between Ukraine and America is important, vitally important. But can Zelensky do a deal with the United States? After what I saw, I don't know.
What are you going to do?
So, well, the Q&A wasn't anything great. It was just reporters asking ridiculous questions. But again, when Lindsey Graham, of all people, is turning favor on Ukraine and is saying, I've never been more proud of the president, never been more proud of J.D. Vance, and the way that Zelensky acted was completely inappropriate, completely unacceptable, you know that you've really screwed the pooch. And it was obvious and evident by that taking place. So I was out to lunch Friday with some friends while this was going on. And we began talking about it. And, you know, you roll the clock back a couple of years to when this first began. You'll remember at the time, Joe Biden, who was the president, was asked as Russia was lining up troops on the Ukraine border. And it seemed like some sort of invasion was imminent. Joe Biden was asked at the time, you know, Russia's staging all of these troops. What is your message here? What do you think is going on? How do you handle something like this? And the president at the time, Joe Biden, said, well, it depends on what Russia does. If it's just a minor incursion, well, then, you know, it's probably fine. Greenlighting Putin to invade Ukraine, which is exactly what Joe Biden did. His weak, feckless leadership on the national stage allowed this to take place in the way in which it did. And we saw and we have seen over the last couple of years the results of that weak leadership play out. When President Joe Biden greenlit Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which is exactly what he did, there's no such thing as a minor incursion. You're invading another country. Minor or not, you send troops across country lines to attempt to seize land. There's no such thing as a minor incursion. Those are Joe Biden's words, not mine, not Donald Trump's, not J.D. Vance's, not the Republicans. That was Democrat Joe Biden's words at the time, greenlighting this invasion. And lo and behold, what happened? War broke out, and that's been what's been going on for almost 3 years now. And so as I was chatting at lunch about this, I think if you go back to when this first happened, and this first began, or in the months following that, there was incredible broad support amongst U.S. voters, amongst the U.S. population, about support for Ukraine. That was very obvious and very evident. But as the years have gone on, this began in 2022, as the years have gone on, that support has dwindled, irregardless of who was in the White House. This, I was looking for some polling to back my stance up, and I found it over at Pew Research. This is, you know, the thing is, it shows Republicans and Democrats and then total in terms of U.S. support for Ukraine. And when this began in 2022, only about 7% believed that the support was too much. That was at the time, indicating that over 90% of individuals, when this started, thought that the support was about right or not enough, indicating huge, broad support. 42% at the beginning thought that the U.S. was not providing enough aid. You now go to when this Pew Research poll was conducted, February 3rd through 9th, so well before this meeting in the White House on Friday, at the end of February. The beginning of last month, you have the poll completely flipping on the other side, where total, you have over 30% of individuals saying that the support is too much. At this point, over $300 billion, United States taxpayers are in the hole. 30% say it's too much, and only 22% say it's not enough. That's a 20-point drop in support, not enough. And a 20-plus percent gap for too much. Now, it breaks it down via party lines. As you can see, Democrats have not moved much on it except for about right. But even them, 5% of them thought it was too much at the start, 14% now. It's a 9% increase. And so when you look at this overall broader trend, it shows you very clearly that the United States populace, the U.S. taxpayer, has had enough of this war. We are dealing with our own issues internally. We are dealing with sky-high inflation. We are dealing with record-high prices. We have so many issues that our country is facing right now due to the failures of the last administration that the American people's goodwill is gone. And that was the discussion that I had Friday with a group of friends. What started as very broad bipartisan support over the last couple of years has shifted to people saying enough is enough. The U.S. is in for over $300 billion on this war, which it does not affect us in terms of geographically. We are nowhere geographically connected to Ukraine. Are there geopolitical aspects that we're involved in? Absolutely. Meanwhile, Europe, who is geographically associated and geographically connected to this, they're in for less than $100 billion combined, or around $100 billion combined. A third of what the United States has put in. And that's frustrating to the American people. That's frustrating to the American taxpayer. And I think you saw some of that in the exchange between Trump, Vance, and Zelensky on Friday. And you heard from Trump after the fact. He was making his way out to Marine One, the helicopter. And he was asked by reporters, and he made the claim that he doesn't think Zelensky wants to make a peace deal. And I think that's a very interesting bit of insight. As I've mentioned multiple times already, everybody knew what Friday was. Friday was not a security agreement. Friday was not a ceasefire. Friday was not a peace deal. Friday was signing a U.S. mineral rights agreement that would get the United States invested in Ukraine from a further financial standpoint in a three-step plan to bring this war to an end. That's what it was. Yet for whatever reason, the Ukrainian president thought that he could bully this administration, bully Trump and Vance, and do it in front of the American media, very, very deceitful, very disingenuous. He thought he was going to argue the fact in front of the American people and try and win some extra concessions. It completely blew up in his freaking face. And this polling from Pew Research indicates that even if he was successful in doing that, trying to litigate this publicly, if Vance and Trump didn't jump on him the way that they did, it still wouldn't have had any impact. You've got 30% of the people of the country right now that say it's too much. So the polling has shifted on this. After hundreds of billions of dollars and years of stalemate, which is where things essentially sit right now. And so the question that has been asked over the weekend, the question that is being asked this morning is, what does this look like in the future? Where do we go from here? Now, Zelensky spent his weekend gallivanting through Europe, the great European allies that have put in a third of what the United States has, getting hugs and kisses from individuals all over Europe. Big, bad, mean, evil Donald Trump treated poor little Vladimir Zelensky poorly. So he was gallivanting his way through Europe, talking to leaders there. And so maybe this ends up being a net positive for the United States. Maybe this blow up on Friday is finally enough to kick Europe in the ass and get them to actually invest in this war. Because it actually affects them. It doesn't really affect us. They have been allowed to slow walk this. They have been allowed to put in minimal in terms of aid combined. And the United States has been the one footing the entire bill. Every single time Vladimir Zelensky has come to the United States since 2022, He has come to the United States. He has spoken to Congress. He has spoken to the presidents. It was Biden, now Trump. And he is always left with billions of dollars or a blank check every single time, with no pathway forward, with no goals, with no accomplishments, just funneling more money into a stalemated war. And that came to an end. He tried to play cute with Trump. He tried to play cute with Vance. He tried manipulating the American public through the media that was in the Oval Office when this was going on, and he got slapped down royally. He was kicked out of the White House, then ran over to Fox News, did a great interview with Bret Baier. The Zelensky didn't do great, but Bret Baier, I think, did a phenomenal job. Obviously, the interview was already pre-scheduled. It would have been the signing of the mineral deal and discussions of that. Obviously, the tone, the agenda of that interview shifted dramatically once all of this took place earlier in the afternoon. I thought Bret Baier did a really good job on that interview, gave Zelensky three opportunities to apologize to Trump, apologize to the American people for his actions, and he refused to do so. He wasn't going to do it. And so then he spent the weekend in Europe getting apparently more money, getting some more concessions, and now we're learning this morning that the United Kingdom, the UK Prime Minister, Starmer, has unveiled a four-step plan for Ukraine. So maybe this worked out. So is it Europe now that's going to negotiate the peace deal? I'm fine with that. Why does the U.S. doesn't need to be involved in it anyway? We have been involved. We're in the whole $300+ billion of your my taxpayer dollars. So maybe Europe now is going to pick up their weight. Maybe Europe is actually going to get serious about this instead of just letting the United States foot the bill. I'll have some details on this four-step plan, plus actually what was the mineral deal, what was actually supposed to be signed on Friday when Vladimir Zelensky decided he was going to blow the whole thing up in front of the American media and in front of President Trump and J.D. Vance. I'll have those details coming up here in just a few minutes. I want to remind you that you can support the show if you believe that you are getting some good value and content. I encourage you to head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig, patreon.com/Nick Craig, and support the show financially. $5, $10 a month if you believe you're getting some value. You get access to bonus content, including daily show notes and our monthly Zoom chat where we chat about the issues and topics of the day. All of that available over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. And we appreciate everybody's, or I should say, I appreciate everybody's support on this endeavor over the last couple of months. We'll have details on this mineral rights agreement that was supposed to be signed, what the UK is now saying about a peace deal, all of that coming up as the Nick Craig Show rolls on a Monday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this Monday morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. We are recapping what was a unbelievable Friday afternoon at the Oval Office, a fiery, heated exchange between Vladimir Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, VP J.D. Vance, President Donald Trump, completely blew up after Vladimir Zelensky attempted to re-litigate this issue in front of the American media, causing those talks to completely run off the rails and Zelensky being booted out of the White House and sent packing, where he's been over in Europe over the weekend, kissing and hugging and getting all this sympathy from European leaders about how this is going to go forward. So let's go to the issue at hand. What was supposed to happen on Friday? As I've mentioned, everybody knew what the deal was on Friday. Zelensky was supposed to show up, talk with Trump and Vance, sign this mineral deal, sign this mineral agreement, and then work towards the next steps, which would have been a security agreement and then peace between Russia and Ukraine. That was the three-step plan that everybody had been laid out. Everybody knew that's what was supposed to happen. Zelensky decided he wanted more. He gambled, and it completely backfired on him. So what was the agreement? It was very simple. Ukraine would have contributed to a fund, the U.S. would have created a controlled fund that would receive revenues from Ukraine's natural resources. Ukraine would have contributed to the fund half of its revenues from future modernization of natural resources and associated infrastructures, such as LNG, liquefied natural gas, and port infrastructure. The fund would not draw on revenues from existing mines, oil wells, or other natural resource businesses, so only new things in the future. And the fund would be designed to reinvest some revenues into Ukraine. This would have been an opportunity for the United States to claw back some money that has been spent. $300 billion, I'll note you. But claw back some of that and begin a process to actually make something happen. That was step one, signing this mineral agreement deal. In the second phase, the two countries would negotiate a more detailed plan to set up the fund. Zelensky said that Ukraine's parliament would need to ratify the second agreement. After that, they would move into a security guarantee. The draft vaguely referenced security guarantees, but did not signal any specific U.S. commitment to safeguarding Ukraine's security, a provision that Zelensky had vigorously pressed to include as the war with Russia enters its fourth year. But everybody, again, knew this. It was mineral agreement, mineral rights agreement, security guarantee, then ceasefire slash peace. That was the three-step plan as it was laid out by the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessemer. That was relayed to Zelensky. It was relayed to the Ukrainian government, the cabinet that needed to sign this. Everybody was on the same page. And Zelensky tried gambling. He rolled the dice and he missed. He completely missed. And it blew up exclusively in his face. And it's obvious by individuals like Lindsey Graham, who played the clip earlier. When Lindsey Graham is coming out and hammering Zelensky, the neocon war hawk that he is, when he's hammering Zelensky, you know that you've screwed up. And that's exactly what he did. So over the weekend, there was this sorrow tour taking place in Europe as Zelensky made his way back to Europe with the UK prime minister and the French president, all these individuals and all these meetings. And so apparently there's now a four-step plan for Ukraine out of the United Kingdom. The prime minister there, Starmer, unveiled this plan. He said, quote, "Any deal must be backed by strength. Every nation must contribute to that in the best way that it can, bringing different capabilities and support to the table, but all taking responsibility to act and to step up their own share of the burden." That's pretty rich, isn't it? Now the United Kingdom is talking about strength and everybody coming to the table and everybody pulling their own weight and giving their own fair share. Where the hell was that over the last couple of years when the United States taxpayer has invested $300 billion into the war? I didn't think Europe was capable of putting in anything else. They haven't up to this point. They put in around $100 billion all in all, in the entirety of Europe. Not just the UK, but the entirety of Europe is about $100 billion, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. So where was all the fair share talk 3 years ago, 2 years ago? They didn't have to worry about their fair share because the United States was writing blank checks. The United States has been and continues to be the largest funder of the war between Ukraine and Russia. So the UK and Europe didn't have to worry about it. Starmer, the UK Prime Minister, and other leaders met in the UK over the weekend and were working out to secure a deal now without the United States. Leaders agreed to keep aid flowing into Ukraine for an extended period of time so it would be prepared if Russia tried to strike again after a ceasefire deal was secured, the first of a four-part plan, according to the BBC. So the BBC has got this four-part plan. They are the ones that broke this. And the four-step plan is this. First, keep military aid flowing into Ukraine while the war is ongoing, and increase economic pressure on Russia. That's one. Number two, any lasting peace must ensure Ukraine's sovereignty and security, and Ukraine must be at the table for any peace talks. Number three, in the event of a peace deal, European leaders will aim to deter any further invasion by Russia into Ukraine. And number four, there would be a coalition to defend Ukraine and guarantee peace in the country. That was the four-part plan unveiled by the UK. I don't really understand how that's a four-part plan. So they're going to keep flowing money into Ukraine and increasing economic pressure on Russia. How is that going to get Russia to the negotiating table? This alleged four-part plan doesn't really have any meat to it at all. It just says, oh, there's got to be a peace deal, and European leaders will aim to deter any further invasion by Russia. There's no teeth to this. There's no meat. The deal that Zelensky had with the United States was absolutely perfect. It would bring the United States and Ukraine together on this mineral rights deal. The United States would have a vested interest in what's going on in Ukraine, which we can debate whether that's good or not, but that was the deal as written. So this alleged deal that was discussed and talked about in the United Kingdom and parts of Europe over the weekend, it doesn't have any meat to it. And CBS News has a pretty good write-up on this morning with Scott Bessonette, the Treasury Secretary. It says Bessonnet, who crafted the economic agreement, said Sunday that, quote, it's impossible to have an economic deal without a peace deal, while acknowledging that the economic deal was initially supposed to be a building block towards securing a peace deal with Ukraine. Bessonnet told CBS News, quote, President Zelensky had thrown off the sequencing, noting that the administration was set up to sign the deal on Friday. The Treasury Secretary said the most tragic part of Friday's breakdown is that President Trump's plan to use the economic agreement was to, quote, further intertwine the American people with the Ukrainian people and to show Russian leadership that there was no daylight between them. He continued by saying, and President Zelensky came into the Oval Office and tried to relitigate in front of the world the deal. Bessonnet said the administration now has to see how Zelensky wants to proceed, saying an economic agreement would be rendered moot if he wants fighting to continue, noting that President Trump and the administration, quote, wants a peace deal. Plain and simple. That's it. The United States wants a peace deal. I think the world should want a peace deal. And guess what a peace deal is going to mean? Both parties coming to the table. And Trump even talked about this, saying that he has to be very careful with how he operates with Russia and Ukraine. If he cuddles up and gets too close to Ukraine, that's going to piss Russia off and no negotiation is going to happen. He gets too close to Russia, that's going to piss off Ukraine, no deal happens. He's got to walk a very, very fine line, a very, very small tightrope between these two countries. There's this idea, and I saw a lot of comments on social media over the weekend from conservatives and people on the right, that Trump needs to just get in bed with Zelensky in Ukraine, and somehow that's going to end the war. There's going to have to be some agreement that's made. What does that look like? Does the geography of Ukraine change? Does the world map change? Hopefully not. I don't think that's what the intention or the goal is. But Trump's got to stay neutral on this. The United States has to stay neutral on this peace deal. You can't cozy up with one party and then expect the other to come to a table and have a good faith negotiation. If Trump 100% partners up with Ukraine, Russia's not going to negotiate. I mean, folks, this is not very complicated. You don't need to read The Art of the Deal to figure this out. When you're the intermediary, when you're the moderator in between two parties and something is going on, you need to stay in the middle. You can't show favoritism to one side or the other. That will not get you into a position where you've got good negotiations. That is not going to get you into a position where an actual deal is made. I don't know why that's such a complicated task to figure out. I don't know why this is so controversial. And of course, all the comments over the weekend. This is the greatest gift to Vladimir Putin that's ever happened. Trump's partnering up with Russia. The same sorry old Russia collusion, Trump loves Russia thing that you've heard for literally a decade, going back to the 2016 presidential campaign. The same sorry old nonsense on repeat. A broken record just spinning ad nauseum forever. I don't know how what you saw on Friday translates into a win for Russia. Now, I guess you could see it as a win for Russia if you want the war to continue. Because this is going to delay any sort of peace agreement, peace deal. So if that's the case, then maybe it is a win for Russia. But if you're somebody that wants to see peace, if you're somebody that wants this years-long war to end, then there's no winners. The only loser in this is the people of Ukraine who want this thing to be over with, who want to get back to living their life. And for whatever reason, their freaking president is gallivanting through the United States and acting like a complete and total jackass in the U.S. And that's all that there really is to say about it. Zelensky tried bullying and attempted to overpower Trump in Vance. He was used to doing that with previous administrations. NBC News reported that from a phone call back in 2022. Even Joe Biden had to tell Zelensky to shut up and to be grateful and be thankful to the American people. Setting this track record of Zelensky, it's never enough for him. It's never going to be enough for him. He continues to want blank checks. He continues to want U.S. munitions and arms, and it's never going to be enough. There's a track record of this now. We have multiple examples of this taking place over the last couple of years with multiple administrations, not just Trump, not just the Republicans, but with Joe Biden. And so it paints this picture of a guy that maybe doesn't want the war to end. It paints the picture of a guy that, as Trump says, maybe he doesn't really want peace. And that's kind of where we stand this morning. Zelensky says he's still open to signing the agreement. The question is Trump in the United States? And the answer to that, the answer to that is unknown as of right now. Zelensky apparently tried to get another meeting with Trump on Friday, and Trump said, to hell with you, I'm not doing it right now. So how does this unfold over the next couple of days? I really don't know. How does this kind of shake out? I truly don't know. We know that Trump tomorrow night is going to be addressing, not a State of the Union, but he's going to be addressing a joint session of Congress. That's going to happen tomorrow night. We'll probably hear some more about it then. And so that's really all I have to pass along to you this morning. And I'll make this point one more time. The United States at the start of this war, the American people, were all in favor of Ukraine. And for a large part, they do continue to support Ukraine. But what they want to see is an end. What they want is war to be over. They are sick and tired of their money, of their dollars, being funneled over to Ukraine for no movement in the war. For a complete and total stalemate, which has existed now for quite some time. They want conclusion. They want a deal. And you heard from Trump in the White House on Friday. You don't have the cards right now. You bring the U.S. into the fold, you have the cards. We want peace. We want an agreement. We want a deal. We want this to end. And I don't know why that was so complicated for Zelensky to understand. He completely screwed himself in this meeting on Friday. I don't know what the hell he was thinking. I have no idea why he thought this was a good idea. There was even the video and the picture online of the Ukrainian ambassador with her head or with her head in her hands, just like completely shocked that this was unfolding, that Zelensky was going this far off script and trying to relitigate this issue in front of the American public. It's remarkable. Ellen is commenting over on our YouTube channel this morning where she's watching live and says, the First Lady of Ukraine riding around Europe in a Rolls Royce visiting designer salons wasn't a good look either. Ellen, probably not a great look. And I think that's why when I'll pull back up this Pew Research poll. When you look at the support for the Ukraine war over time since 2022, you've seen the amount of support being too much go from 7% to 30%, and not enough go from 42% to 22%. As time has gone on, this conflict, this war that has been brewing, has fallen out of favor with the American people, and it's no surprise. It's not shocking, it's not unbelievable, it's not unheard of. There's got to be an end in sight. Zelensky had the opportunity. Again, the first step, this mineral deal was not the end-all be-all. It was not the end of the war. It was not a ceasefire. It was not a security deal. But again, everybody knew that. Three or four-step plan. It started with the mineral deal. He decided to play cute. He decided that he wanted to try and get more from the administration by pleading to the American people via the U.S. media, and he completely shot himself in the foot. So I'm sure this will be an interesting thread to track over the next couple of days and weeks. We'll keep an eye on it right here on the Nick Craig Show. Taking a look at some other national news this morning, some interesting things going on. Federal workers received a second email over the weekend from the U.S. Office of Personnel Management asking them to list their accomplishments in the past week. Late Friday night, the email was received and they were told to list 5 bullet points about what they actually did. And the message also included this at the bottom. Quote, going forward, please complete the above task each week by Monday at 11:59 p.m. This time, the email said, please don't send any links, attachments, or any classified/sensitive information. If all of your activities are classified or sensitive, please write all of my activities are sensitive. Federal agencies are giving specific instructions to employees, according to news reports. Roughly 1 million out of the 2.25 million federal workers responded to the first email. An employee of the National Institute of Health spoke to Politico and said, quote, I'm just sort of numb to it all by now. It's been like one long funeral and it never lets up. You're numb to what by now? Having to work? You're numb to what? Actually having to do a job? Having to prove your worth to the American taxpayer? What are you numb to? What are 5 things that you accomplished last week? That's a funeral? The shock and outrage over this, I just don't get it. Who do these individuals think they're speaking to when they release these ridiculously stupid comments to Politico? It's been like one long funeral that never lets up. You think that you're going to win favor, win brownie points from the American public because you can't tell the Office of Personnel Management what you did in a 40-hour work week? You think you're going to win any great favor from the United States, from the American people? I don't think so. This is all happening as a coalition of labor unions and civic right organizations, aka leftist groups, are in lawsuits alleging that the first What Did You Do Last Week email violates federal law. U.S. District Judge William Alsup found that the Office of Personnel Management likely violated the law by failing to comply with notice and comment rulemaking in issuing memos. The judge also found that the agency improperly fired probationary employees, this judge, an appointee of President Bill Clinton. in a privacy assessment first published on February 5th in response to the lawsuit challenging the Trump administration's implementation of the email system. The Office of Personnel Management said responding to any mass email was voluntary. On Friday, OPM updated its privacy assessment to say that federal workers could decline to respond, but, quote, consequences for failure to provide the requested information will vary depending on the particular email at issue, end quote, there from OPM. In a post Saturday on X, Elon Musk said, quote, the president has made it clear that this is mandatory for the executive branch. Anybody working on classified or other sensitive matters is still required to respond if they receive the email, but can simply reply that their work is sensitive. And he did that and replied with a link to the indicating that the Department of Defense under Pete Hegseth is requiring all staffers to respond to the email. So these agencies want to continue to fight this. Of course, the old Democrat tactic, sue till blue, you're well aware of that. That is a Democrat tactic that we have seen a lot here in North Carolina. As we watch and follow, you know, state politics, we see Democrats over and over again attempting to change the way in which government operates. Republicans enact law, Democrats don't like it, so them and all of their Democrat advocacy groups file, whether it's a federal or state briefing, to try and get the law thrown out, to claim that it's unconstitutional. This is the Democrats' attempt to take power. And it really hasn't worked. It's been essentially a miserable failure. They can't win at the ballot box. And this is really the whole issue. Democrats do not have a clear and concise message. They do not have policies and platforms that resonate with the majority of the American people. And because of that, they don't win elections. North Carolina is the prime example of that. They just can't win. The General Assembly has been exclusively controlled by the Republicans for, like, at this point, like 12 or 13 years. They've been unable to convince North Carolina voters they, the Democrat Party, is the best to handle this state going forward. And we saw at the federal level this play out in November of last year. The Democrats' policies, the Democrats' message, the Democrats' platform was woefully rejected by the American populace, by the American voting public who showed up and actually casted a ballot. They overwhelmingly supported President Trump from both an electoral college standpoint and a popular vote standpoint. Gave Republicans a much larger margin in the Senate than was even expected or even a pipe dream for Senate Republicans. And Republicans were able to retain control of the U.S. House. And so because the Democrats' message doesn't work, because they're incapable of convincing the American people that their ideas are better, instead of revamping themselves, instead of going back, sitting around a table and figuring out, okay, these issues are not working with the American people. What do we need to do to win their vote? What do we need to do to have successful elections and convince people that our policies, our platform, our ideas are better? Instead of doing that, they're just going to try and gum up the current administration in court. They're just going to sue over everything that Trump and everything that the Republicans do for the next 2 years. It's a very short-sighted approach to the issue. The Democrat Party is facing a massive problem right now. It's been going on for the last couple of years. I played that very interesting clip back a few weeks ago from the former Secretary of Transportation, Mayor Pete Buttigieg. He was at some think tank, some discussion, talking about the Democrat Party, talking about the issues that the party is facing, talking about how they spend too much time pandering to small groups instead of trying to, and I say pander, but pander to the American people as a whole. They've isolated themselves into all of these small little groups, and they've called out all of these groups, and they attempt to win over favor with all of these little groups, and what it ends up doing is turning off the vast majority of the American voter. What it ends up doing is fracturing the Democrat Party and making them think that these wild, radical ideas are what the vast majority of Americans support. And that is their issue right now. That's the problem that the Democrat Party is facing. And the idea that you heard those comments from Buttigieg back a couple of weeks ago prove that even somebody like him, who is well entrenched within the Democrat Party, it proves that he can read the writing that's on the wall. If Democrats don't change the way in which they speak to the American public, if Democrats continue walking down this very dangerous path of pandering to small minority groups, because that's essentially what they've created. If you're a minority group, come to the Democrat Party, beg, cry, and plead for something, and we'll give it to you. They've decided that that's their best approach. That's a great idea for them. And in reality, it just completely derails the Democrat Party. Because instead of speaking to a broad group of voters, instead of speaking to the American population as a whole, it's all of these little segments, all of these little groups. And it's not sustainable long term. It's not something that Democrats can continue running with. Because it turns out, and I know this is going to be very shocking news to you, very, very shocking news. Turns out the issues that the Democrats think people care about, like men and women's sports, are very unpopular with the vast majority of the American public. Turns out that that's not a popular stance, not a popular thing with the vast majority of the people here. But because a few little minority groups say it's a big issue, because the trans community, which is fully entrenched within the Democrat Party, says this is a huge deal, it is. It must be. It's completely and totally farcical. And so they've got to reimagine and re-envision themselves, or they're going to continue to completely fall off in favor of the American people. And by the way, let me state, I'm okay if they continue down this path, this trail. If they want to continue pandering to these groups with things that are broadly unpopular, 80-20 issues, I'm okay with that. I'm totally fine with it. I would imagine, though, over these next couple of years, you will see more individuals like Pete Buttigieg speaking up against this, challenging the Democrat Party to change their messaging, to change their narrative, and get back to a message that actually resonates with the American people. Because at the end of the day, Democrats want to win just as much as Republicans. And so they need to figure out how to craft a message to actually do such a thing. And right now, what they're doing is not happening. It's just not working. Just seeing this coming in, President Trump is set to make an investment announcement at the White House around 1:30 this afternoon. That's going to be coming up a little bit later on today. We'll keep an eye on what that update is and bring you those details coming up tomorrow morning right here on The Nick Craig Show. Thank you so much for joining us on a Monday morning. Don't forget that you can get exclusive and bonus content by visiting patreon.com/Nick Craig. We're back tomorrow morning right here on The Nick Craig Show.